Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart, and let's hear a little music from the band Pylon. Song Volume, the first track off the debut album of the 80s rock band Pylon. Released 40 years ago this month, the album Gyrate launched the band from their hometown of Athens, Georgia, where the four members had all attended art school. A few years later, they put out another album, Chomp, which earned them a lot of praise and an offer to tour with this Irish band named U2. But instead of accepting, they decided to break up. That brief but impactful period is the focus of a new 4-LP set called Pylon Box, which includes reissues of those two albums as well as earlier demos and unreleased recordings. Also featured is a 200-page book that tells the story of the band alongside Polaroids and concert posters, plus testimonials from other artists. Those include their Athenian older siblings, the B-52s, who were early champions of the band, as well as another Athens group, R.E.M., whose drummer Bill Berry once called Pylon the best rock band in America. Joining me now are two of the band's surviving members, vocalist Vanessa Briscoe Hay, who became a nurse after Pylon, but still fronts a couple of bands, including the Pylon Reenactment Society. Hi, Vanessa.
Hey, Allison, how are you doing?
I'm great, thank you. And bass player Michael Lahowski, who works now at the Georgia Museum of Art in Athens. That makes sense for someone who studied art. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Allison, thanks for having us on today.
So, Vanessa, one of the things that's become central to the mythology of Pylon is you were all these art students at the University of Georgia before you got into music. So what had you been studying before then, Vanessa?
Well, I think it was the group of people that we had in Athens at the time, and it was the times themselves. I mean, it was a very exciting time all over the world for young people. Art and music and culture were all a big mix, and women were coming to the forefront, people in different groups were coming to the forefront. It was a great big mix, and it's an exciting time to be caught up in all of that. I think especially Athens at that time, we had a connection between, say, New York and the rest of the world, Germany and the UK. We knew people that went there and came back. We had a professor who came for, I guess a chair is what you call it, Elaine D. Canning, was in Athens for several years, and it was the Carter years, so things were looking up all over.
Michael, how did your art school education influence the way you thought about music?
Pretty much in every way. I mean, you know, I did have an interest in music. I'd been listening to music since I was in grade school and was pretty avid about it, but I really didn't know anything about it. I didn't ever really think about making music in that kind of rock and roll way, but I did make a lot of art, and my roommate was Randy. He was our guitarist. He's the one member of our band who's passed on, and Randy and I were just getting comfortable experimenting with different forms of art outside of the areas that we were studying. And we were also encouraging each other. I was giving him photo critiques of his Polaroids. And he was the one that encouraged me to consider us starting a band. And I was insecure about it. I was like, well, not only has it already been done, but I mean, I don't know what I would play. I don't know how music's really made. And you know, even though I read all the, you know, liner notes on my albums. And so he challenged me to go listen to some music and just try to tease out what instrument that might be. So he talked me into that. And, you know, we both just, so I chose bass. I figured it was only four strings. Like, how hard could that be? You know, a little easier maybe than playing a drum kit. So that's how we got going. And he was going to play drums initially, and we realized we weren't getting anywhere, just the two of us that way. So then he just picked up a guitar, and we just kind of crafted sound on those things. And, you know, luckily we added a good drummer and a very dynamic singer before we had a band.
Yeah, Vanessa, you weren't part of the original lineup. It was a band called Diagonal until you came along. What made you want to join the band?
Well, they asked me to come and audition. I mean, I really had no, you know, really just thinking back about it, it was not anything that was on my radar about doing with my future. And I was just hanging around town, waiting for my first husband to graduate college. And Brandy came and saw me at one of my part-time jobs, and he said, would you like to come and audition for our band? And he explained it to me, what it was about. And so I went and auditioned, and, you know, at the end of that, they didn't really say anything except thanks. And I was like, well, what was that all about? And the next day they asked me to be in it. And so then they went a little further. I think Randy explained to me the premise of it was like an art project where you have a goal, where you have a presentation or an exhibition or whatever. And the goal was to go to New York City, get written up in New York Rocker, and then disband. You know, it's like we'd create this thing, present it to, you know, one of the world's capital of music, hopefully be written up by Michael and Randy's favorite publication that they saw. I don't know if it was a Barnett's Newsstand or a Chapter 3 Records in Athens, and that we'd disband. And at the time, I thought, this isn't going to take up a whole lot of my life. Here I am. It's like 41 years later.
So, Michael, it's so interesting that the way that Vanessa described your goals. This is part of the legend, too, that you sent a letter to your professor, and you wrote, we are not musicians, we do not like to jam or even practice, we only want to perform, we only care for the product, not the process. Such a young person's letter, right? But at the time, yeah. What did that mean for you? What were you trying to say?
I mean, I feel like when I read that letter that it says holds opposing, you know, thoughts and manifestos in the same letter. I don't know. I mean, we are very presumptuous, a little bit self-confident about that our ideas were going to be enough, you know, that if we just, but I do really think that ultimately that confidence is part of what made us go forward and plunge into it. And then, you know, we did have sort of a low level of investment in terms of, like, we weren't counting on it being our future, being our identity, being a thing about fame or any of that, you know, or even money. So, and, you know, we really didn't get most of those things, but it is quite a tribute to be reading in this book that comes with this project so many amazing, well-known musicians, including our friend Fred Schneider, who I believe is listening right now, and who helped us get going in New York City. And these people, you know, make it sound like Pylon really did have an influence and was a band, you know, to think about. So it's we definitely went way beyond our initial goal, and I think our conviction and some of that sort of precocious attitude is part of what got us, you know, at least to the next step.
My guests are Michael Lutowski and Vanessa Briscoe Hay. We're talking about Pylon Box, a new 4-LP set that includes 2 album reissues, as well as earlier demos and unreleased recordings. We'll talk more about the box set after a quick break, and of course, listen to some music. This is All of It. This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. My guests are Vanessa Briscoe Hay and Michael Lutowski. We're talking about their band Pylon, specifically this new 4-LP set, including 2 album reissues, as well as earlier demos and unreleased recordings. I want to play one of those earlier demos. It's an early version, Michael, of the song The Human Body, and it's called the Raz Tape. Why is it the Human Body Raz Tape?
Well, the name of the song is The Human Body. It's one of our earlier songs that has some lyrics influenced by when Vanessa Curtis and I all worked at a DuPont textile factory in Athens. It was just a weekend job with 24/7 nighttime shifts and daytime mm-hmm. shifts rotating. And so it's filled with some of that kind of like cautionary information that we were exposed to through all the different safety booklets and such. And the Raz Tape is this wonderful, really never heard before. I think we've only released one track off of it in the past. It was recorded by our friend Chris Rasmussen, and he had a really good Nakamichi field recorder, cassette, and just a few microphones, no real way to mix it except for through physical positioning of the microphones and such. And it turns out to just capture the band just totally live, not performing for an audience, but also not in a studio with all of the additional things that could be done to improve or change the materials. And it's, you know, pretty much one or two takes of most of the songs is one take, and it's very intact. And I think it shows the band in a really full way, and includes some tracks that did not make it, you know, and as we went forward too. So there's a few sort of lost treasure type things in there, I guess you'd say. But yeah, that's one of the special things about the box. And the box also includes a reissue of our first 2 albums, and those are going to be made, those are available separately on vinyl too, outside of this box release.
Well, let's listen to The Human Body from the Raz Tape. From Pylon, The Human Body. Vanessa, you can hear how much energy you have, and you get that sense of how dynamic you guys were live. And you know, a lot of musicians, Vanessa, specifically have pointed to you, like Corin Tucker of Sleater-Kinney is quoted in the box set as saying, quote, "Seeing this band that was fronted by a woman who was such a protagonist on stage was so exciting for me as a teenager." Were you aware of that kind of imagery and what you meant to young women at the time?
You know, actually, not really. No, I mean, we were just all too busy doing it. And to be honest, at the time, I mean, we were, well, the women of my time, there were some very strong females who were in bands, like Kate and Cindy from the B-52s and mm-hmm. Lana Lovitch and Debbie Harry and, you know, just on and on and on. It, you know, wasn't that unusual to have a woman in the band. And in our band, I felt I was always equal. And that was one thing that we were a true democracy. We wanted our things mixed where all the instruments were equal. I was equal. So, no, at the time, I didn't think about that. But later on, you know, years and years later, I became aware of the Riot Girl movement. And I was just kind of nodding my head, thinking, this is great. You know, mm-hmm. we're all standing on the shoulders of former women and other people who stood up for people's rights, you know, through history. And I guess I've just had the luxury of not even really having to think about it with my particular peers that I have from art school. Is I felt always felt equal, and I think everyone should.
My guests are Vanessa Briscoe-Hay and Michael Lahowski. We're talking about Pylon box set, the new box set that's coming out. I want to play your debut single, Cool, and then we can talk about it on the other side. This is Cool from Pylon. Called that one of the greatest debut singles of all time, but according to the box set, that wasn't supposed to be the first single. Is that right?
Yeah, well, we already played The Human Body a little while ago.
Yeah.
Well, and that song and Feast of My Heart, which is sort of a little bit more of a rock and roll rager type thing, those were our two songs that we had just, you know, we knew those were our solid hits. We're like, yeah, we get a chance to do a single, you know, we're going to put these two songs on there. So we went in on day one of a two-day schedule in the studio and recorded Human Body and Feast of My Heart. And then we all went home with a rough mixtape, and I was listening to it that night. And we all got on the phone and just talked it out and said, you know, it's just too rehearsed. It's too precious. Wow. Like, we need to do something, one of our newer, more raw songs. And so luckily Danny Beard, who was putting this record out for us, he let us talk him into the idea that the next day we'd start all over and finish it up in one day. And I'm really glad that Cool and Dub, the B-side, ended up being our choices. That single is very well received in its day, and I think it holds up.
The box set has Polaroids in it, concert tickets, drawings, paintings. Vanessa, do you have a favorite artifact?
Oh, I guess my tambourine.
How about for you, Michael?
Maybe my whistle. But you're talking about my. But I mean, overall, as far as anything that's in there that belongs to anybody, I would have to say Randy's guitars.
Yeah, Michael. In our last, we've about 45 seconds. What's your favorite artifact that's included in the book?
Well, we have some clothing in there. Curtis never really wore much clothing, except gym shorts, our drummer. But Vanessa had some trademark pieces, a hat, a dress, a couple dresses are in there. But Randy and I, we used to sort of match our clothing ideas. So both of our jackets ended up in there. Mine is my Boy Scout jacket that my mother lovingly sewed all the patches on the back. And Randy's is a motocross jacket, I think. So, yeah, those are both in there.
For fans of music, you definitely want to check out Pylon Box. Vanessa Briscoe-Hay and Michael Lahowski, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank
we really
you,
appreciate
Allison.
It.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.